Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin's out there driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
We're featuring the 2014 Hyundai Genesis. With $8,800 off, you're going to be driving in the luxurious Hyundai vehicle. It is their luxury car. Plenty of room for five and seats three comfortably in the back, not where you have to jam everybody together and, you know, everybody's got a shoulder in somebody's chin. Not in this vehicle. Plenty of room in the back. Of course, plenty of room in the trunk as well. Quietest vehicle ride I have ever driven, and of course a very smooth ride as well for that rear-wheel drive vehicle that averages in the upper 20s around town with gas mileage. That's the Hyundai Genesis, the 2014 Hyundai Genesis, nicely equipped as well, and $8,800 off at Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Say hi to Skip, Danielle, and the folks there, and find out how you can be driving around in that thing very soon.
Sounds great. That's Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. What is the single biggest news out of Pirates camp today?
I know this. McCutchen cut his hair for charity.
Yes, he did.
What do I win?
What you usually get.
Nothing.
Sounds bitter.
Just typical.
Greg Brown joins us now from Bradenton, the voice of the Pirates. Greg, welcome. It is great to have you back. So, pluses and minuses. What are the pluses you see out of camp so far? What are a couple of areas that still would be on the concern list?
Steve, the first thing comes to mind, the biggest plus for me is the catcher Tony Sanchez has stood out for me. Not only what he's been doing with the bat, I mean, he's hitting the ball as well as any Pirate player this side of Starling Marte. Had a couple of doubles to right field. He's hitting the ball extremely well and hard the other way. But he looks not only locked in at the plate, but behind the plate. He looks like a guy who's kind of arrived and looks like a big league catcher. There have been questions about his defensive abilities behind the plate. Now, I've not seen every game this spring, half of them. And in the games that Sanchez has played, he's blocking the ball fundamentally well. I assume he's calling a good game. That, of course, can only be deciphered through the pitching staff. But he's also throwing the ball well. And then there was concern, and frankly, he had the so-called yips, where he really struggled to throw the ball accurately, and he worked hard on this offseason. On his throwing, and he's been very accurate, dead on. He's nabbed three runners that I've seen. So that's the big positive. Where they have to work on, I mean, I think they're okay fundamentally. The one guy that is going to draw a lot of attention is Jung Ho Gang, the player they signed out of South Korea, who hit 40 home runs last year, hit 350, an all-star in the Korean baseball organization. And early on, he put a couple of good swings on some pitches in spring training, had a home run and a double the first couple of games. But since then, he has really struggled at the plate. They're trying to bounce him around. He's been playing shortstop in Korea, but they're having him play some third base and second base. I think he's okay at third. He's got a really strong arm, but I think we see that his range is limited. And even yesterday, he had a play that got confused on at second base. So I think he's a work in progress. Other than that, I think they're fine, and they're so-called pundits experts that are picking them to go to the World Series, and I wouldn't argue with them. I think if they're healthy, they've got a real good shot of not only reaching the postseason, but going deep into the postseason.
Last year in the majors, Greg, hitters hit 242 against bullpens, which is the lowest number since 1968. Now, the Pirates contributed to that because their bullpen has been so good.
How do you like the way it is rounding into form with some roles in spring training that could initially be the way that Clint Hurdle wants to go?
Well, I think that, as you say, Steve, it was certainly a strong point for them last year. I see no reason why it's not going to be as good, if not better. Though, the one thing about the bullpens, I remember old manager of the Braves, Bobby Cox, the Hall of Fame manager, talking about it, that it's the one area in baseball that you cannot count on year in and year out. It's almost a flip of the coin because relief pitchers, they kind of come and go and they bounce around and one year they're bad. The next year they have outstanding ERAs and pitch very well. But Neil Huntington, I think one of his strong suits has been the makeup of the bullpen year in and year out. They've got Mark Melancon back. He was an all-star before. He's a closer for the Pirates. He took over that role last year after Jason Grilley struggled, and he was fine. If he weren't able to continue as the closer, they've got a backup plan. They've got Tony Watson, who has closer stuff. So at the back end of the bullpen, I think they're strong. They got Antonio Bastardo from the Phillies, a veteran lefty, a Jared Hughes, a right-handed setup guy, and they have hard-throwing guys in camp. We saw Radamés Lees, a right-hander who had pitched in the Orioles organization as a starter previously. He pitched three scoreless innings yesterday. I think he'll be part of the bullpen. They've got some other guys in camp who I think will fill the role. Vance Worley or Jeff Locke, whoever loses the fifth spot of the rotation, is likely to go into the bullpen. And they have some minor league guys, too, that can come up and help. I think the one thing that they have in this organization is depth. Yeah. And that's another reason why I think so many people are picking the Pirates to contend for a division title, because even if they have injuries or pitchers in this case are ineffective, they've got a backup plan, which a lot of teams don't have, frankly, in this day and age, and the Pirates are fortunate in that regard.
Where is the competition right now for that fifth starter?
Well, I think it's between Vance Worley, the right-hander, and Jeff Locke, the left-hander. The one caveat to that, if Morton has changed his delivery, he had surgery on his hip in late September last year. He's certainly healthy, but with this delivery change, he got beat up pretty badly the other day. He got hit hard. If they decide that the two more starts down in spring training aren't enough for him and they want to keep him down in Florida for another couple of weeks, they could put him on the disabled list at the start of the year, and then both Jeff Locke and Vance Worley begin the year in the rotation. I think that's a possibility. If that's the case, then they have an extra bullpen spot available. So there's still some work to be done. They're off day today. They get back to work tomorrow. They have eight games left in Florida. They fly out of Florida on Thursday the 2nd of next week, and then play two exhibition games against the Phillies before starting the regular season on Monday, April the 6th in Cincinnati. So there's still plenty of time to get some work in, but they are going to have to make some decisions between now and opening day.
You've done this for a while. You and I have gone from being young guys a long time ago to being the old guys.
No, Steve, you and I are both still young.
That hasn't changed.
It's unbelievable how that's happened. I don't know how we do it.
Jay, we stay the same. Is this as balanced a lineup as you've seen since you've done these games with the Pirates in terms of just pure 1-8 balance in the lineup?
Yeah, without question. In fact, yesterday, the first day that I've seen what could be an opening day batting order, at least 1-6, with Josh Harrison, who finished second in the batting race last year, up-and-coming guy Gregory Polanco hitting second, and then McCutchen and Neil Walker and Starling Marte, who looks like he's on the verge of a bust-out year. I don't know that there was any player better in the National League in the second half of last year than Marte, who really has all the tools. Pedro Alvarez, I think, is a more relaxed player this spring. He's not going to be hitting cleanup. He's going to probably hit sixth most nights to take pressure off of him. Then Francisco Cervelli, the catcher they got from the Yankees, who looks to be he's got a great eye of the strike zone, and a fiery guy. And then Jordy Mercer, who quietly had one of the best seasons of a shortstop after a terrible month of April last year. So I say 1-8. I'm hard pressed to find another team in the league who is as well balanced and as versatile, because that's one thing that Clint Hurdle has that he hasn't had before. He's got guys that, if need be, can bounce around. Harrison became an established third baseman last year, but if he could still bounce around and play some outfield, corner outfield. He got Sean Rodriguez from the Tampa Bay Rays, who plays everywhere. Corey Hart will spell Alvarez at first base on many nights against left-handed pitching. I'm really anxious to see this lineup go to work in real games starting April the 6th, because it could be a real special year. I don't remember the last time the Pirates had this balance of offense, the strong starting pitching in that bullpen that we talked about, and I think they're strong defensively. Knock on wood, they stayed relatively healthy, and they get off to a good start in April. Last year, they had a terrible month of April. This year, I think their sights are set on a strong April and a strong year altogether.
Finally, Greg, have you really noticed anything on pace of play? Because it's been a point of emphasis. Has it been even noticeable?
You know, what's funny, Steve, is that yesterday in the broadcast booth after the game ended, we heard the time of game, and it was a really, I thought, kind of a slow game. Jared Hughes pitched one inning and gave up a bunch of runs. There was a pitching change in the fourth inning, and it seemed like it was a four-hour game. It was barely over 3 hours, and as we pointed out, it's only about maybe the second time that I've done a game this spring that was 3 hours or more, and I could swear that almost every game of spring training the previous several years, when it was under 3 hours, you were surprised. Now, I don't know whether that's because of pace of game rules or the pitching has been better. My hope is that it is the pace of game, that maybe I'm not even realizing it, but maybe those guys staying in the box more, maybe they're not walking around as much. They have that clock between innings that's 2.5 minutes, so that when it gets down to 20 seconds, as the clock starts to tick down, they want that player in the box. So we come back from a commercial break. For the most part, the pitcher is ready to deliver. So maybe it is going to work. I guess we'll find out for sure when the season gets underway. But I have noticed that at least spring training games, 3 hours are more rare than they have been in the past.
Greg, as always, great respect for your work. Appreciate your time very, very much.
Likewise, Steve. I look forward to running into you down the road. Thanks a million, Steve.
That's Greg Brown, play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Kevin Hurd comes back with complete in-depth analysis of what he heard in the interview in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, guess what day it is?
Tuesday.
No, it's Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Remember, every day is Hyundai?
Hyundai.
And it's the Lease We Can Do sales event going on now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Hyundai.
The Lease We Can Do is cut the crap and give you low payments and no money down. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata SE for only $237 a month for 36 months with zero down. Zilch. Nada. Or lease a 2015 Hyundai Elantra SE for only $183 a month for 36 months. Again, no money down. Or you could go green. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata Hybrid for $250 a month for 36 months, and you guessed it, zero due at sign. No hidden fees, no plus tax, and blah, blah, blah. It's the lease we can do. These cars are here, these deals are real, and they're only at your home for Hyundai, Sunbury Motors Hyundai,
Hyundai,
in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, where every day is Hyundai.
Hyundai!
Lease is based on 10,000 miles per year, zero total due at signing with approved HMFR Tier 1 financing, tax included. See dealer for complete details.
Interesting pace of play. I think they got so used to seeing games in the 2.5, 2:45 range. Yesterday's 3-hour game kind of took them aback. That's a good thing. It's a very good thing. At least baseball, to their credit, acknowledges the issue in today's fast-paced world that you can still have a game of pace like baseball has. It, you know, they have their own pace. Nothing wrong with their own pace, but they took it too far. It's too long. You know, you got to be able to. You know, I always love when people call the show and they say, "Oh no, it's great the way it is." No, okay, then why are there fewer people watching? Okay, we're not talking about Speedy Gonzalez and, you know, you fly up to the plate, you take some cuts, and you sit down and you go. No, but get into the box and hit. Get on the mound and pitch. Okay, I don't want you wandering all over the place.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how this works in the AA and AAA minors.
And all, but also at the same time, on the major league level, the fact that I think Greg made an important point that at 2:15 on the clock, you must be in the box and set to go. You must be up on the mound and set to go. And when TV at 2:30 says, okay, boom, you pitch. That's made a big difference. Instead of, well, lallygagging around, walking around, showing a graphic of the dude, the whole thing, and oh, here, you know, here's the relief pitcher. He comes in. Here's what he's done so far, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. You know, tell me after the first pitch. Okay, that's just common sense of making it move. I mean, look how frustrated in arenas. I mean, for example, we had on Alex Walker yesterday, who covered Iowa and Gonzaga over the weekend in Seattle. He was telling me that, you know, the timeouts in the arena, people are like, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. And that's what makes me laugh about when I'm watching the NCAA tournament on TBS, True TV, TNT, and CBS. What's the one area the announcers never acknowledge? They talk about depth for a team. Like, Duke only has 8 scholarship players. They only have 8 guys. It only comes into play in the NCAA tournament in foul trouble. Why? The commercial breaks are longer in the NCAA tournament. The first use it or lose it timeout in the first half, instead of being a quick 30-second timeout, is a full timeout. Just like the regular season, the first timeout of the second half taken by a coach is also a full timeout. You are guaranteed 10 long timeouts during the course of a 40-minute game. So you're not going to get players fatigued. You can shorten rotations. You can shorten your bench because you have enough built-in breaks where they're sitting there. And that's the important part about that first use it or lose it in the first half. That's a full timeout instead of the regular season being a 30-second timeout. What's the difference? The difference is this. The length of it, okay, that's one. But number two, only in full timeouts are you allowed to sit on chairs in basketball. If it's a 30-second timeout, you are not allowed to sit on the chairs. It makes a big difference. The TV timeouts are longer, and that first timeout of the opening half is a full timeout when the coach takes it. And you're allowed to bring out the chairs for each. So that's why this notion of shortening benches is applicable in the NCAA tournament. You do shorten your bench. You don't need as many people. Fatigue is not as much of an issue. Yeah, you're playing deep into the season. But at the same time, you have so many more breaks in the games that are longer and conducive to rest. Foul trouble is where the issue comes in for depth. It does not come into play in depth when it comes to how the game's played out and there's no foul trouble. It's quite the opposite. So back to the original point of pace of play in ballparks, hopefully that 2.5 minutes between innings will be a plus for people in the ballpark, where if you're lopping off 30 to 45 seconds here, 30 to 45 seconds there, where there's no action anyway, it adds up. It adds up. And it makes a big difference when you're at the ballpark. Hey, the game already slows down enough. Well, I'm going to go out of the box. I'm going to wander around. I'm going to look down to third. I'm going to get back in. I'm going to reset myself. Look, just get in the box and hit. Okay? Let's go.
Steve, I was surprised that the NFL has not made a move to change some of the rules that we thought would change, including extra points. It looks like they may make that move in May. Are you a little surprised by that? I thought the extra point was something they were really focused on doing something about this time around.
I don't think they know what to do with it. Well, I'm not sure the Pro Bowl gave them a good read as to what to do with it. That's part of it.
I mean, they've discussed going for 2 points from the 1.5-yard line or kick an extra point from the 15. They've talked about eliminating it altogether and just placing the ball at the two-yard line and making it a two-point play. They've also talked about narrowing the goalposts and also talked about a college-type rule where the defense can score a touchdown on a block kick or interception and a fumble or a fumble return on a two-point conversion.
Well, they should that should be worth
that
2 points.
Should be in
shouldn't
there.
Be a touchdown.
It shouldn't be a touchdown, but it should definitely be 2 points the other way.
Now, here's the problem they're going to have with making it by taking the kick out completely and just making it two-point conversions. Players Association may complain about that.
No, it's another play.
Exactly. It's a bunch of plays.
And it's a high-intensity play where the extra point may not be as high-intensity.
Right.
I do like the idea, I think, a little bit of moving it back. I'm not sure how I feel about narrowing the goalposts, though. I got to think about that one.
Nah, I'm not for narrowing the goalposts. It's the right width.
And I'm definitely against taking it away altogether.
I mean, one of the issues, too, is that, look, the hash marks are lined up with the goalposts. That's a big issue.
Maybe go back to the college hash marks?
College hash marks are divide the field into thirds.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin Clambake continues. Kevin was telling me in the break about e-cars.
Formula E, it's called. Yeah, they are Formula
E stands
ones.
For empty.
No, well, yes, because they're not using fuel. You're right. They're
no,
electric
empty
cars.
In terms of interest.
Oh, they're electric cars.
Terrific.
Well, next Saturday,
I mean,
you can watch.
Do they trip over the extension cords?
There are no extension cords. They have not found a safe way, though, to exchange batteries. So what they do at about the midway part of the race, and obviously the races are not ultra long, because the batteries aren't going to last that long.
Show's dying.
They actually swap cars. So they hop out of one car and get into another one.
Show's dying.
That's it. I'm just sharing a new sport for you.
Well, we lost 20% of the audience. That didn't. Was it worth it in the end?
It was to me.
And the show's about you?
Well, it is on my end of the microphone.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
I like to highlight sports you don't. If extreme or obscure sports quarterly would be my magazine, okay?
And I like to talk about sports that people like.
You do, and I understand, and that's great. That's called balance.
Your audience stays on.
Oh, all right.
What do you do when I'm on vacation?
What do you mean? What do I do when you're on vacation? When you're on vacation, so am I.
No, I mean, do you do the show? I mean, what do you do?
Well, we collaborate the best ofs, and I host the best ofs.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you went on and talked about e-cars and Pocono and things like that when I wasn't here, and it turned into some sort of free-for-all.
No, I save it for when you're here. That way you can complain about it.
Well, I'm not complaining about it. I'm just pointing out what the audience already knows. It's on FS2 for a reason.
Sometimes FS2. They show it on FS1.
Yes, not exactly a step up the ladder.
Well, I'm not saying this is going to be a mainstream. I'm think if you like motorsports, it's intriguing to see cars that are electric, and maybe that's the next generation of auto racing now.
Do you drink before the show, or is it just during the show?
Just during the show.
Okay, just checking. I get concerned. Next generation. Wow. What's next? Boxing with no gloves?
Oh, no. That's boxing
no
with
punches.
Robots. Boxing with Robots.
Boxing with Robots.
Yeah, they did a they did a movie about it. It was good stuff.
Oh, no. Is this the Hugh Jackman movie?
Yeah, it was a good movie. I like that movie. Real Steel.
That's awful.
Great video game, too. You never played Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
No.
Oh, I loved Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
We went out and played in sunshine.
Yes, but you lived near somebody. I didn't. The nearest neighbor was 5 miles away. Having the guys get together for a pickup game of football where I lived was a little challenging.
And in a nutshell, we now blame it on our parents.
Now you're starting to understand my love of obscure sports.
Now I'm sitting here and I'm feeling like I should be paid to be your therapist. All right. Fabulous.
Hey, listen, pretty soon football is going to be robots.
No. No. All right. Roger Goodell earlier today did address the media. He talked about the Los Angeles situation. Evidently, there are three teams that are looking at Los Angeles: St. Louis, Oakland, and San Diego. I would hate to see San Diego move to Los Angeles. I mean, they've been such an important part. And Phillip Rivers is great. He says, look, the team moves to Los Angeles, I'm not going. He won't go. If the team moves to Los Angeles, he says he's not going.
I actually do have a small clip of what he had to say about teams in Los Angeles.
I do expect that we'll be hearing from all three teams, not only to the league staff, but also to the committee, sometime in late April. We will likely report back to the membership again in May when we meet. There'll be a lot of dialogue. There's a tremendous amount of focus on the stadium alternatives, looking at those stadium alternatives, marketing studies.
And he also talked a little bit more about the team in Los Angeles by 2016, maybe?
We're focused on doing this right. If we go back to the Los Angeles market, we want to succeed for the long term. And we have a lot to do to get to that place. So we're not focused on 16. Obviously, if it did happen in 16, you'd have to play in a temporary facility.
And that would probably be the Rose Bowl, to be honest with you. The Rose Bowl has already said that they would take a team for 2 years while the stadium is being built. The Rose Bowl's already said that. So there is an option that is out there. Oakland needs a new stadium. What they're playing in right now is lousy. St. Louis, despite playing in the Jones Dome, it's old and they need a new stadium. And San Diego, their stadium goes back to 1968. They absolutely need a new stadium. The question is, where do you put it? Because fans love going out to Mission Valley. And the parking out there is tremendous. And I worked a Holiday Bowl out there back in 1989. You can't ask for a better situation in terms of getting in, out of the stadium, parking around the stadium. I mean, you're talking about a stadium that right now is 47 years old. Which means the luxury suite situation is not what you need it to be. And all the way through, there's only so much renovation you can do. And in San Diego, it makes no sense to me, with all due respect. The Padres have Petco Field, but the Chargers have, since 1961, when they moved from Los Angeles. And San Diego has to understand that the identity that the Chargers have established with them, it's something they need to take a good, long, hard look at and say, hey, you know what? Let's get something done. The mayor and the owner have butted heads over this. Now, I don't know where the ownership's going wrong in terms of their presentation, but it's something where I think all sides, it's best for all sides to keep the team there, which then leaves St. Louis and leaves Oakland. I mean, do you want two teams in L.A.? To me, I put one. I would put one team in L.A. and let them own the market for a while. I realize you have the Jets and the Giants. And so the stadium's in constant use. I do understand that. But that's the only market I mean, I know Los Angeles is huge, but at the same time, you know, what, San Francisco is 400 miles away. Santa Clara, let's say Santa Clara, let's be safe here, is about 350. And what's San Diego? San Diego's what, 80 miles away? No. And Boston, 100. Yeah, I could see Oakland going down there. It'd be great for the Raiders. They need that. St. Louis, I mean, Stan Kroenke, it's his stadium, so obviously you got to take a good, hard look at the Rams going back. And there's the idea of, you know what, heck of it. Get a new stadium in San Diego, get a new stadium in St. Louis, and a better situation for the Raiders, then maybe you put an expansion team there. It's a very, it is the single dominating issue with the NFL meetings right now is Los Angeles. And what's interesting is they take the meetings every year and they go West Coast, East Coast, West Coast, East Coast, West Coast. This year it's in Phoenix. Next year it's actually in California. Interesting. Just thought I'd throw that out there. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Here's an issue for San Diego to consider. The NFL has said that if the Chargers move to Los Angeles, the idea of San Diego getting another team, extremely low. Chargers have played, I said since 68, I was wrong, it's actually 67. They started playing at what was then called Jack Murphy Stadium or San Diego Stadium. It's now Qualcomm Stadium. But Eric Grubman, the NFL's executive vice president, told the San Diego Union-Tribune, San Diego's a great city, but it's a low probability bet for any market to attract a team when expansion is not on the table. Says if you have a team, you should do everything you can to keep it because the backfill is a low probability. San Diego specific, it is a low probability if there are already two teams nearby. Decade absence or above 50%. It is, but you know what? The NFL, to their credit, has brilliantly leveraged Los Angeles into getting whatever it wants in any other city. Okay? I just went by, what's today, the 25th? So, 18 days ago, $975 million. It's going to be spectacular. I mean, the progress they made in a year blew me away as to what it looked like.
Kevin? You're saying the NFL said, well, if you don't do this, you might lose him to Los Angeles.
But where did Ziggy Wolf threaten to move the Vikings?
Well,
he threatened to move him to Los Angeles.
Yeah, the place that makes the most sense.
Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium. Unbelievable building, Kevin. It dominates. That building is huge. It's so big that at one point when the Hoosier Dome was still up, before they had demolished it, it was side by side. It looked like the Jordan Center next to Beaver Stadium. That's how big Lucas Oil Stadium is as a structure. How do you think they got that? They threatened to move the Colts to Los Angeles. Houston goes into expansion, beats out Los Angeles for expansion. How did they do it? Because they said they built an $800 million retractable dome. They did it. New Orleans stays in New Orleans after Katrina. Important and critical to the revitalization of the city. What did they threaten to do? Move it to Los Angeles. Stadiums built all over the National Football League by one mere threat. We might take the team to Los Angeles. It has been the greatest stadium building chip I've ever seen in my life. It's brilliant. Brilliant.
Now, here's San Diego. There, look, San Diego needs a new stadium. I mean, it was built in 1967. I mean, you're approaching 50 years old. I mean, I know I work in a 65-year-old facility or a 55-year-old facility. Okay? Just to do the press box, they're going to renovate of $2 million. Okay, San Diego needs a new stadium. I've been to that stadium. Now, they're talking about maybe building it downtown, but now they're talking about putting it out next to Qualcomm Stadium. All you got to do, I mean, but, you know, the stadium they're talking about would be a $1 billion entity. And I talked about Minnesota. Minnesota is a $975 million entity, and it doesn't have a retractable roof. But the Los Angeles bargaining chip has been the best bargaining chip the NFL could have asked for. They've been able to get stadiums and palaces built all over the landscape by the mere threat they might take, quote, that team to L.A. Well, now you've got three more. All three have the same common problem. All three need new stadiums. Oakland and San Diego are the two oldest stadiums in the league.
And by the way, in popularity, Oakland is the more popular team by far than San Diego when you compare two.
Yeah. But San Diego also, they sell out Charger games.
Sure.
And it's great weather down there.
Whew. Well, isn't half the year Oakland's playing in dirt?
Right, because of the baseball, they're the only they're the only place that plays in a multi-purpose stadium. The only ones. Now, I don't know if Oakland has the money to do this. San Diego probably does, but that's where you talk about Los Angeles. Wow, they don't have a team in Los Angeles. Look how it's been used, Kevin. It's been used brilliantly. From a business point of view, brilliantly.
Well, from Los Angeles as a city, it seems to be an issue when it comes to loyalty to teams. Because you look at the Dodgers, for example, and I've picked on the Dodgers for years. That is not a baseball game. People don't go to that to go to a baseball game. They go out to the ravine. They get there about the third inning. It's an event. They leave before the seventh, no matter if they're winning or losing. They're not there to support the team as much as they are to be at the event.
Well, they're showing up, though. It's not like the ballpark's empty.
No. But like I said, when it comes to a fan base, they're not your typical fan base.
No, but they do. The Kings have great attendance. The Ducks have great attendance. The Lakers and Clippers sell out.
For a long time, the Lakers did, but the Clippers were questionable.
Right, but now the Clippers are good, and now they have their own fan base. My God, the guy just bought the thing for $2 billion.
This makes me think back when the NFL was doing at least the first expansion I can remember, when they brought Carolina and Jacksonville into the league. Jacksonville was on the low end of the list of cities to get a team.
I never quite bought into that. You know, I wasn't quite sure why Jacksonville.
No, I'm not picking on Jacksonville, right.
I don't know. A lot of people move south. It's interesting how Florida has as many teams as California.
Well, and at that time, Los Angeles didn't have a team. So everybody just assumed Los Angeles would be on that list.
Yeah, didn't get it. Have they moved out yet? I think they were on the verge of moving out.
What, Jacksonville?
I think when the expansion teams were given in, 93, so the Los Angeles still had teams.
I thought the Raiders started, just moved right before that.
They started playing in what, 95? They started playing in 95. Raiders were a bone of contention because of the lawsuit. Because Dow Davis has said we're going to play in Los Angeles, and the league's like, well, you can't do that. You have to have league approval. Al Davis said, well, bring it up at the next meeting. We're playing in Los Angeles.
Let's see. Jacksonville started in 95.
Right. I think they were approved in 93, though.
They were, see, the ownership group formed in 89. 91, the NFL announced its decision to expand by 2.
All right.
And so it would have been 92 or 93, I think.
Yeah. And the Rams and Raiders were still in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'd thought that one of them had moved. I thought the Raiders were the ones that had moved out at that point, but you may.
And the Rams, at that point, by the way, the Rams were playing in Anaheim.
Right.
Yeah, they had left Los Angeles. They were playing in Anaheim. Tomorrow's show. Kevin, on why the Olympics are an absolute must for any community to spend money on.
Go, Danville. Go get them.
Danville has about as much chance of seeing the Olympics as someone in Lexington, Massachusetts.
By the way, the Rams were there. 94 was the last year in Los Angeles for the Rams.
Right, but I think Jacksonville was approved as a city before that.
I believe it was the year before. Yeah, I think you are correct. I know it was close. So.
Yes. But here's the issue. We started out the show with the depressing news that they're going to let the voters in Massachusetts decide. The Olympic flame goes out.
Snuffed.
Will of the people.